So, hey, why don't you tell everyone who you are?
Well, everybody, my name is John Sullivan. Most people call me Sully. I build guitars. I live in Texas. I have a company called Sully Guitars. Perhaps you've heard of me. Most likely not. But by gum, you have now. So now we're all acquainted and we're good friends. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. We've kind of been in each other's orbit for a little while before we actually met. We've got a few mutual friends, Perry Ormsby and Kate Hunter, excellent guitar builders.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because, you know, when Kate had come out to do a class and she had mentioned that she knew you, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so insane. I mean, because that was not something I was expecting to, you know, this little degrees of separation, you know, where I thought we were just going to sand today, but now you're even cooler. Absolutely. And I do have to say that you are an absolute blast to follow on Twitter. And, and you know, like your little Skype pictures got the little dog, the velour churro, which I think is just, which is, you know, it's like, I feel like I've known you for years.
Totally. why don't you tell the folks a little bit about your guitars? You've got some specific models that are, you know, I mean, to me, they have such a distinctive design. You know, you've definitely got your own aesthetic going on. Why don't you tell us about your particular models and, you know, describe them a bit?
Oh, sure. No problem. It's always fun. You know, it's very distinctive looking, and, you know, sometimes you have to take a beat for a second and go, is that a good thing?
Or
it's like, it's like, oh, that's very unique, honey. Oh my God, I like that. Please never show that to us again. No, I have, over the years, I started very, very small, just kind of building parts guitars like a lot of people do. 15, 16 years ago, which is freaks me out. And eventually, you know, kind of got into, you know, building and from scratch and eventually doing it full time. But, you know, I've at one point I had, you know, what felt like, you know, 30 different models. I've got something for everybody. And over time, you know, you see what sells and what people like, and what also limits your growth. Because, you know, there are a lot of, you know, people kind of get started building Strats and Tellies and that sort of thing. And because they're popular and, they're relatively easy to get started with and they're very cool. But I realized a few years ago that I really needed to identify or define what Sully Guitars is as a brand and what that brand looks like. And so I've been, you know, kind of retiring models over the years to, you know, sometimes people get upset and, you know, but it's all a process. But right now I've got six and I don't plan on, you know, I might drop it down to five eventually. I'm not really sure. So we'll start with my personal favorite, which is a 71. And the 71 gets its name because that's the year I was born and super original. But it was based on kind of addressing for me, all of the reasons why I've never kept a Les Paul. Mm-hmm. When I got started playing guitar when I was a little kid, all I ever wanted was a Les Paul. I mean, you know, I mean, I grew up listening to Kiss and, you know, Ace Frehley. I just wanted to be Ace Frehley when I was a little kid. And, you know, it's just such an iconic, such a cool, such an awesome, I mean, just give me a black custom exposed pickups and, you know, and I'm good. Or so I thought until I had one. And I know sometimes you just don't bond with certain guitars, but, I eventually realized that it was kind of a scale length issue for me. And it's, I'm not the smallest guy in the world. I'm not the largest guy in the world, but I always felt on a short scale guitar, like past the 12th fret, it would just get very congested and I'd wind up overbending a lot of things. And I'm really not that much of a high maintenance guitar player as that sounds. But So I just started drawing and I spent like 3 to 4 years on the design. I would just kind of, you know, make some corrections and just let it simmer for a while. And I got to the point where I actually made a couple. And so, you know, it's my own take on the classic American single cut. And you'll look at it and you'll say, yeah, that's where it gets its framework from. But, you know, I think the similarities kind of end there. It's more in my to my taste, it's a little more ergonomic. It's got some sculpted bits on the back of the guitar that make things a little bit more comfy, and it kind of wraps around you a little bit and kind of, for me, it gets out of my way. And that was a guitar that has always been very near and dear to me, just because it was one of those things that was just kind of born out of, you know, my own kind of frustration, or, and just, you know, I had been building models that were, you know, I built like some Strats and some stuff that were a little bit more common. And it was, that was one of my first steps, one of my first major steps into kind of identifying what it is that I'm going to do. Yeah. So you can see the 71 at sullyguitars.com. And
I'm there right now, actually.
well, thank you. I appreciate that. And you know, a little bit of recent news, jumping way to the, you know, to the present. In a couple of days, you know, that guitar, the 71, is going to be on the cover of Guitar Player magazine. With courtesy of Stevie D from Josh Todd and the Conflict and Buck Cherry. Mm-hmm. He and Rich Ward and Ryan's last name. But you'll see Ryan on the cover of Guitar Player magazine with Stevie and Rich. And Stevie's got his 71, that is insane. Mm. I'm super, really, really excited. Like, I want to buy so many of them I can just like make flooring or something. I don't know. So that's really exciting. And then from the 71, I think the next one that's a little bit more near and dear, well, not than the 71, but of my favorites, is the Raven, mm-hmm. which is absolutely, you know, based on, people will say it's based on a Firebird, and I'll say yes, but it's based on a Jackson Firebird, because that's uh-huh. where a lot of the Sully Guitars DNA kind of comes from. It joins the body joins the neck at a different fret. It doesn't neck dive. It's its own kind of thing, because I got into them, while Paul Stanley had some really cool Firebirds, like the Iceman was like my favorite of his guitars. And, when I saw Robin Crosby from Rat playing like Jackson Firebirds, and Nikki Sixx had, you know, Hamer Thunderbird basses that were like really cool and had cool graphics, and that was really kind of what did it for me. But it was a little bit more in the traditional style when I started making them, and last year I retired it in that current shape and went back to just drawing stuff. And it was fun, because it was right around the time that Perry was designing the Futura, and we would kind of send drawings back and forth to each other. And, you know, we do that on a from time to time. And it's like, what do you think? And, oh, well, maybe turn it around this way, or, you know, stuff like that. And so, you know, they both kind of have that same kind of raised elevation, although we both do it a little different, which is, you know, the way that sort of thing goes. But I wanted to kind of, you know, bring back the Raven in its own, you know, in the way that I see it. And so I did. So I like that one. And then there's the Stardust. This is going to get a lot faster as we go, kids, I promise. The Stardust was a collaboration and kind of an experiment, because I wanted to take the 71 and maybe kind of turn it around and like break it into quadrants and kind of turn it around and maybe kind of meld it with like an offset that didn't necessarily look like you would imagine an offset. You know, if somebody says an offset guitar, you think of like a Jazzmaster or a Jaguar or something like that. And it kind of goes to that neighborhood, but it just kind of drives through. And I wanted it to be, to have a little bit of that aesthetic, but I also wanted it to be something that would look like something that Bowie might have played, because he had just passed, and I was really just, it just sucks. It still just sucks. Mm-hmm. And, I wanted to kind of honor him in that way. And, you know, the Stardust obviously gets his name from the Bowie catalog, and, that's a fun guitar. We're going to be doing some things, depending on when this airs, things I can either talk about or things I can't talk about just yet, but you'll see it now. So,
yeah, we'll just leave it at that. I was planning on putting this up today, so let's not talk about that right now.
We won't. But I will say that there are some very exciting things that are going to be happening at NAMM with the 71 and the Stardust, and I'm excited to share them with you guys. So we've got the Stardust, and then from there it goes. We've got, you know, like a Super Strat kind of thing. It's a 624, and that name comes from, oh, six strings, 24 frets. Very original. Good job, Sally. And then there's like a, you know, a take on a doesn't have any common lines with a Tele, but you know, it's got the roundy bit on top. So, you know, it's like a Super Tele, and that's a 624T. Where do I get these things?
I saw a gold sparkle, one of those that melted my mind.
That one, it's kind of hard to photograph. It's kind of like a chartreuse. Well, it's not kind of, it's a chartreuse metal flake. And that was a fun guitar. Well, I'm sure it still is. It was fun to build. I like that one. I love metal flakes. And I have, you know, and it's, I think it's fun to see them be popular right now. And I kind of had a feeling that was going to happen. And I'm really glad because, I mean, all these things are cyclical anyway. And just there's something that's just so much fun about metal flake finishes, and you know, you can look at it and you go, oh man, it looks like a bass boat, and it, like, or a 70s like motorcycle helmet, and yes, it does in the most glorious fashion. It's just so much fun, and that's the one thing that I try and, you know, share with, you know, the guitars that I build. You know, I write notes in the guitars, and sometimes they're notes that you're never going to see, so I'll take pictures of them, and you know, I try and, you know, little jokes or smiley faces or whatever. I try and have fun with it because this is a fun thing. And, you know, I am so excited to be able to do this for a living. And so, I, you know, just try and, it gives me joy. So damn it, I want to give some people some joy along the way. Finally, you know, we've got the Revolution model. And that one, it's just a pointy V. I like pointy V's, and I don't know if that one's going to stay. I've got a couple that I'm building right now. It's not, one of the most popular guitars that I build, because also, you know, I don't really promote it a whole ton, but it was, the ones that exist, I really enjoy. And, you know, there are aspects of those builds that I really enjoy doing, like, cause there's, you know, little contours and stuff on the back and into the neck joint, and it looks really cool. And that name came about, I was, just late at night, and I'm working on something, and actually I'm probably just scrolling on my phone, and, you know, the TV's on, and, was watching, you know, the hat was on like VH1, and, they were playing Purple Rain. And, you know, there's that scene, you know, just before they go on, and it's just this announcer that says, ladies and gentlemen, the Revolution. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I'm like, well, I want to call it the Revolution, you know, cause I've got the Stardust for Bowie. I've got the Revolution for Prince, even though there's no way that Prince would ever play a Revolution. it's just this big pointy V, or maybe, you know what? Maybe he would, who knows? So that's where that came from. And that is, in so many words, the Sully Guitars lineup for 2018.
Nice. Now, you mentioned before one Mr. Nikki Six. There's more to this tale, isn't there?
Yeah. You know, we've all got the things that started us playing and enjoying music and moved us along. You know, I was a little teeny guy. I saw a picture of, you know, Ace with, you know, smoke pouring out of his Les Paul. And I'm like, that's the greatest thing in the world. I stole my sister's nylon string acoustic guitar, and I had a Chipmunk Punk album. It was called Chipmunk Punk. It was Alvin and the Chipmunks, and it was called Chipmunk Punk, and it was just covers. And it was like, it had like My Sharona on there. And I loved My Sharona. So I taught myself as best as I could how to play My Sharona by the Chipmunks. this little guitar, and you know, I put makeup on my face, like, you know, you do. And, I heard Van Halen, and it was another one of those, oh my God, this is wow. Give me like nine tons of this, please. And that was, you know, Ed revolutionized the way that we played guitar. And you know, I had a very similar experience again when hearing Randy Rhoads. And then right around that same time, I'm in seventh grade, I'm in study hall, flipping through a circus magazine. And I see this ad for BC Rich Guitars. And I've never seen them before. And in that ad were three people. There was a picture, these little rectangular photos. They weren't together, but it was a picture of Lita Ford, Nikki Sixx, and Blackie Lawless. And, you know, it was cool and sexy and dangerous. And I'm looking at this ad. I'm like, who are these people? These guys are really cool. And, you know, I'm flipping through the magazine and I'm like, Nikki Sixx, Motley Crue. I hadn't heard of Motley Crue before. And then what seems like, you know, turn five pages later, there's an ad for Shout at the Devil. And it's just, there are four photos that are like in the gatefold. And it's got, you know, the black picture of the black album cover with the black pentagram. It's the whole, like, how much more black could this be? And then it's just like Motley Crue, every mother's nightmare. I'm like, I'm in. Uh-huh. And so I was just like, you know, I went out and bought Motley Crue, you know, it was all about Motley Crue from then on out. I had spoken with him on the phone a couple times when I was living in Hollywood as a teenager, and but we had never met. And he started following me on Instagram this past April, and it was very strange. And I'm not this kind of everything happens for a reason or a serendipity or whatever kind of guy. But you know what, like on Facebook, it'll show you like on this day, you know, X amount of years ago, you shared this article from The Onion and it was funny. Mm-hmm. But you know, on that same day, like I woke up, it was just a day in April, and it was, the anniversary of like, I went to a book signing that Nikki had done. And, you know, there's some photos from that, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was a cool day. And then later that day he follows me on Instagram and I'm like, no way. So that was nuts. And so he, you know, Nikki, I think, you know, was drawn to the Raven because of its, you know, bird stylings. And, you know, my six inline headstock, was a direct love letter to my favorite BC Rich headstock. My first good guitar, my first good electric guitar was this BC Rich Warlock that had the six inline headstock. And it was kind of like their version of a Strat kind of thing. And so I took it, but I always felt it kind of looked a little melted. So I kind of took it and did my own version of that. And that's where that was born. And so knowing the styles of guitars that Nikki liked and played, you know, when I made those, you know, people would say, oh man, you should make a bass and get it to Nikki Sixx. I'm like, well, yeah, sure. Let me do that. but he had, this year he, after, you know, Motley was done, he started taking guitar lessons and vocal lessons, and he's just, you know, having fun and being retired. And so I'm seeing that, you know, he's playing, you know, he's got a Firebird that he's, a friend of his had loaned him. And in this post on Instagram, he said, you know, I've got to give this back to my friend cause he's uncool. And, and he said, does anybody have like a white Firebird studio that they can loan me? And I'm like, well, I don't have a white Firebird studio, but I happen to have a trans white Raven that was at NAMM earlier this year. And I mean, it's just sitting here. It's a cool guitar. And I commented, I'm like, hey, I might have something. Sure. And so, you know, and this was late at night, and I then, you know, filmed the guitar, and I pulled out this Motley Crue bandana that I've had since like seventh grade. And I put it on the neck and like, you know, hey, Nikki's looking for a white Firebird studio. And I'm like, I think this might work for him. What do you think? And so he sees it and so he messages me. But this is, you know, he's 2 hours behind me in California. This is late at night already, so I'm in bed. I'm sleeping. And I wake up in the morning and there's all these messages on my phone. And I'm checking Instagram and there's a message. And it's just from Nikki, goes, interested in the Raven. And I'm like, and I'm like, oh my God, this is nuts. And so this was, this would have been, actually it was Mother's Day. So it was like May 10th or so. And so I messaged him back and, you know, I'm like, hey, no problem. Just send me an address to ship it to, happy to send it out to you to check out and let me know what you think. And so he messages me back a couple hours. He said, just woke up, going to have a couple of cups of coffee. Here's my number, text me so I know it's you. And then, you know, we'll, I'm like, oh, and so, he gave me a call and, we talked for about an hour and a half and we talked, I think for about 10 minutes about the guitar. And, could not have been a nicer guy. And you know, one of the things that I'll say, as a guitar builder, when we have prospective clients that are reaching out, just advice to being a customer, if you're interested in a brand, and guitars that they carry, it goes, or at least it did with me, it goes a little bit, it goes a long way if you know the names of the models instead of, yeah, I really like that Les Paul meets an Iceman looking thing that you've got. I'm like, well, yeah, okay, cool. I know what you're talking about. Yes, it's a 71 and okay, cool. But, you know, he's like, he had done some homework. It was really weird because I was not expecting it. I thought it was like, yeah, you know, cool. Go ahead and send it out and, you know, I'll let you know and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But it was not a conversation I was prepared to have. But one thing that I've kind of been saying since then is, well, this is nuts. But apparently this is what my life is like today. So let's just do this right now. Mm-hmm. So I send him the guitar and, he really likes it. And I'm like, well, you know, and he's like, this is great. I love this. It's that the neck feels like home and all that. And I was a little worried because like that neck, it's like, it's got like a thin kind of Charvel feel to it. And you know, if someone is used to playing vintage guitars, especially basses, you might want something a little more, you might be used to having your hand filled a little bit more than a thinner profile neck, but he's like, I love this thing. It's just great. I want you to build me one. Actually I want you to maybe build me two. And I'm like, sure. Why not? So, I had, we kind of figured out the specs and he keeps in touch and, you know, I'm not, you know, I'll like text him pictures as things are going and, you know, he shared some of them and it's just nuts. He is, you know, and he'll check in from time to time and say hi and see how things are going or give me a call or whatever. And, it's nuts. so Nicky had, introduced, so he's friends with Stevie D from Buck Cherry, Josh John the Conflict, and they're good buds and, you know, they play guitar together and hang out and, you know, all that stuff, drink coffee. And, so, you know, Nicky had, I guess, told Stevie about me and Nicky had said, you know, he told me, he's like, hey, so my friend Stevie, is interested in the 71 and I happen to have a demo 71 Trella on hand, which is the carved top version. And, so I said, well, you know, if you want, I mean, I can send it out. You know, if he wants to check it out, I can send it to you. He's like, yeah, sure. Okay. That'd be cool. And he's like, you know, send it to me. Cause you know, I want one. And I'm like, okay. and he's like, maybe then Stevie can check it out for a couple of days if that's okay with you. I'm like, yes, that's fine. If you can vouch for the dude. Yes, sure. And so the guitar shows up and he calls me. And, you know, if you've ever shipped a guitar, you know when it's out for delivery and you know what that panic from when you see that it's arrived to when you hear from the person that got it, you know, you're on pins and needles because, like, did it arrive safely? Is it, you know, did it snap? Is it, you know, is everything okay? So the phone rings and it's him and I'm like, answer the phone and he's like, dude, what is wrong with you? And I started laughing. I'm like, how much time do you have? And he's like, oh boy. Oh man. Okay. Well, we'll trade off. I'll go first. And you know, and so, and he's like, no, seriously, this thing is awesome. And again, I'm just not prepared to hear this sort of thing. And I feel very self-conscious kind of sharing all of these things sort of because it's like, oh, yeah, aren't you cool? no, I'm not. I'm just incredibly fortunate right now. And so he's like, you know, Stevie, you know, I told Stevie that it's here and you can come pick it up. And he said, he'd, you know, come by in a couple days or so. I'm like, all right, man, cool. You know, enjoy. And about an hour later, I got a video message from Nikki, and it's of Stevie. And he's like, you know, hey, Zelly, I got the guitar. And so he was all excited. And so that was in June. And he's, you know, he's had that guitar ever since. So mm-hmm. That was the guitar that is on the current episode of My Favorite Riff on the Sixth Sense YouTube channel. It's the Nikki does an interview and he had Stevie on. And so that guitar is the one that I sent him. And at the time of the filming, there was some a graphic that's on it that was a decal because he wanted to do it for a video. And when Stevie got that guitar, he said, okay, so I want you to make me one. And, you know, can we do, you know, something cool? And, you know, and what's funny is that they're both of those guys, and this isn't even something I ever thought about, but both of those guys are, you know, like the guitar is really nice and it's so shiny and it's so pretty and it's so shiny. Like, I'm just afraid I'm going to hurt it. And I'm like, trust me, you're not, just go ahead, knock yourself out, have fun. So when Stevie and I were talking about what we were going to do for his guitar, it's like, well, you know, it's just, I love the shape and everything about it. It's like this guitar feels like it's made for me. And I'm like, that's the nicest thing you could probably, you know, that you could hear as a builder. And I was so happy. And he's like, you know, but you know, my style, you know, like most of my guitars are a little ratty. And I'm like, well, I have a friend, Billy at Rock and Roll Relics, who does fantastic Nitro relic work. So let's just send it to him for the paint. And then, you know, you won't be afraid of it and, you know, be the best of both worlds kind of thing. And so that's what we did. And I was really excited to, Billy also did the paint work on Nikki's Raven that he has now. And it was really big thrill to work with Billy too, because, you know, we had been, across the aisle from each other for the past couple of NAMM shows. but I knew Billy as a guitar player in Jet Boy. And yeah. I loved Jet Boy and I loved those two records. And I'm so happy that they are recording a new album right now. And, so it was, you know, it was such a thrill, you know, and it's just really crazy little network of people that they all know each other. And yeah, so we've got that going. And then, I've got a guitar in process, a Raven, in process for AC Slade, which I should have to him hopefully before the end of December, because he's got a gig with the Misfits at the LA Forum that they sold out. And so I would like to get that guitar to him so he can play that at that gig, but yeah. We'll see. But it's been a really exciting head spinning year for sure.
Yeah, Matt,
for sure.
AC is such a nice guy. The first time I met him, he introduced himself and he said, "Hi, I'm AC. I play in a band called The Misfits." And it's like, motherfucker, I know who you are.
yeah. And you know, I so AC is friends with my friend Andy Blacksugar, who, dear listeners, if you're not familiar with Andy Blacksugar, do yourself a favor right now and just do a Google search or go on YouTube and search for Andy Blacksugar, A-N-D-E-E, Blacksugar, you know, like you would spell Blacksugar. He is a ridiculously unfairly talented guitar player. He's the only guy that I know who, you know, we all love Jeff Beck. And we all love, you know, Steve Vai. But he can, there are times, and I'm not maybe doing this justice by saying there are times when, like, you know, if somebody is playing like a Jeff Beck song, or if they're very influenced by Jeff Beck, they're never going to sound like Jeff Beck because Jeff Beck's an alien. Andy can sound like Jeff Beck when he wants to and do that sort of thing. And he's just like, there's such, he's got this huge just musical catalog of all of this music that he just creates and just gets out there. He's got a dance project. He did a song for song cover of Madonna's first album down to the cover photo. he loves Jellyfish, and he's just such a phenomenal guitar player. Anyway, so he is friends with AC. And I had met AC this past NAMM because Andy was at the amplifier booth playing, and so I had met AC there, and we had kind of, you know, followed each other a little bit on social media and that sort of thing. But he is such a nice dude, and he had come back to I'd seen him again this past April. He came to town here in Dallas and was talking at a – he was doing a clinic for a guitar school, I guess, for lack of a music school. And it focuses on, you know, lessons but also performing together as a band. They also work on band management and demos and, you know, and all of that stuff. And so AC had come out to just kind of talk about, you know, getting into the business and what his experiences have been like and give advice and that sort of thing. And so when he was here, we got to spend some time and started talking about maybe some guitar plans and some things that we can do. And he's just such a really positive, nice guy. And the thing that's been really great is with all of these people that I've been, you know, kind of interacting with this year, the one thing that has been a constant is everybody's really positive mm-hmm. and everybody's really supportive and cool. And, you know, I'll get a phone call and it's like, hey man, haven't talked to you, haven't talked to you in a little bit. How you doing? You know, just checking in to say hi. And, you know, it seems so simple. But it's an interesting kind of thing. And I'm very, very happy that this is going on for obvious reasons, but it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, in terms of the whole positivity thing, that's one of the reasons I started iHeart Guitar was this was kind of Twitter was mm-hmm. kind of a thing, but, you know, there was so much negativity on forums and stuff. And I was like, this is exhausting. I need somewhere happy to kind of hang out and draw guitar yeah. people to me, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. kind of create my own little community. And, of course then Twitter turned into a shit show.
Well, there's that, but you know, you can still find cat videos on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
you know, so there are, you know, but then again, you're still, taking that same spirit onto Twitter. You know, there are cute dog pictures. There are fun Star Wars thoughts. There are great music recommendations. And, you know, I thanked you on Twitter yesterday for it, but, really enjoying the new, record from The Church. It's really good. And,
that record is incredible.
Yeah. You know, it was just really nice. Like, you know, it's, I work in my garage, and thankfully right now the weather's been pretty nice, and it's generally pretty nice. It's kind of warm here. But it was just that kind of day where, you know, it's breezy, it's sunny, it's not too hot, but I'm just kind of starting my day, and I just put this record on, and it's just like a perfect thing to listen to at this particular moment. Yeah. And it was really, you know, I listened to it, you know, it just repeated on my phone. I probably listened to it about four times through, and I'm like, man, what a great record. It's, I don't know if I can call it a fun record, because it's just really, really good. And it just sounds nice. And it was just the perfect thing to listen to. And then I think I mentioned I fell into this Johnny Marr wormhole. And that was great too, because, oh my God, I love Johnny Marr. And, he had a live album come out, in 2015, that I was unaware of, and it was fantastic. So, if you haven't listened to Johnny Marr's live album, I think it's called Adrenaline Baby. Do, because, you know, I had seen him live when he was in town, and my son and I had gone, and, you know, he played a couple of Smith songs, and it was so great. And, you know, he ends with, How Soon Is Now. And that, you know, you're talking about positivity and things that you love about guitar. I have this you know, my, we've all got our, you know, top five or top 50 list of favorite guitar players. I have this list, these three little guitar moments that always just make me stupidly happy. And one of them is Johnny Marr's guitar on How Soon Is Now. And, you know, I love guitars and, but I'm really stupid when it comes to amps and especially pedals. I'm like, oh my God, how does any of this work? Can you please help me? But just that sound and whatever he's gotten, I'm sure it's a delay and maybe a tremolo or something. And I know that is like, that's a slide and, but still all together, it's just one of my favorite things in the world. So, to hear him play that live, was just awesome. So yeah, that's my plug for Johnny Marr. Get yourself. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the really cool things about the current musical environment is, sure, no one buys albums anymore except maybe me. But
I do.
Cool. But just the access to stuff, like, you know, I have a Spotify premium membership, and mm-hmm. I figure, like, I'll even listen to things that I've already bought on CD or iTunes on Spotify, yeah, because if no one's buying albums, I can at least kick in, you know, that fraction of a cent to the artist I love. But it means I can go back and listen to things that I missed. You know, mm-hmm. I always liked The Cure, for instance, but then through Spotify, I'm like, oh, I can listen to everything. I don't need to physically buy all of the albums, and yet I'm paying for them in a way. And I can catch up with all the stuff I missed, or like Hooskadoo. I'd never listened to Hooskadoo, and now I can't get enough of them. You know, and it's not something you would think I would listen to. Like, you know, I kind of mm-hmm. look like a metal guy, and I'm into shred and stuff. But it's like, no, there's so much like stuff out there that I missed that I can now kind of admit that I like, instead of being like, no, I only listen to things affiliated with DeFi or Megadeth.
Yeah. No, and it's funny because I have found myself over the past like 2 weeks doing that same exact thing, because I have Apple Music, and so, you know, you pay for it, and you know, as long as you're paying for it, this stuff is in your catalog. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Hooskerdoo and have never listened to them. I haven't either, but I love Bob Mould. And like, I love all of his solo stuff and like his acoustic stuff specifically, I really, really love. And you know, with The Cure, I think I might be in a minority, or maybe not, but I really love The Cure's pop sensibilities. And, you know, I know it might be an unpopular opinion, but I love Friday I'm in Love. That song, it's just perfectly happy, well done, well executed, layered, good pop. It's a good pop song. And, you know, there are songs on that record that you can still open your veins to. So don't worry, kids. but yeah, no, I don't have all of their albums. I really liked the live ones. The live ones have a special place in my heart. So I was working at a record store when they came out, and I just remember, you know, listening to it like in this just massive, you know, record store, and it was, I really enjoyed it. But I have to admit, you know, we're talking about, you know, I look like a metal shred guy, and, you know, yeah, I do too. But I've learned over the past years that I'm a really bad metal fan. you know, cause like with, there's a lot that maybe I missed out on that I have to kind of go back and maybe give a second chance. And there are things that are, you know, people would be like, I'm done listening to this podcast, so I won't name names.
One thing I've really been
to spend some time. What's that?
Oh, sorry. We just had a Skype glitch there.
That's okay.
I think we're back.
Yes.
I was going to say, lately I've been like obsessed with Fleetwood Mac Rumors, which I know everyone grew up with that record except me. My parents never listened to it. It was never around me. Mm-hmm. And then a little while ago, I realized I should check this thing out if it has such a good reputation. And now, seriously, I cannot listen to the song Dreams without getting a little bit tearful.
Yeah.
I played it like 3 times yesterday because I was like, I'm one of those people who bottles up their emotions and just kind of tries to get it done and then kind of just explodes and falls apart. And I was like, I feel like I need to just, you know, maybe leak a few tears right now, but I'm holding it in so much. I'm going to put on Dreams. Just let it go.
Right.
And,
you deserve this. It's like we're going to sit down, we're going to have some ice cream, we're going to sit on the couch, and we're just going to ugly cry and listen to Dreams. No, I get it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That my turning point for appreciating Fleetwood Mac was in 97 when they reunited and they did the concert on VH1. Oh, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay, cool. Because I heard a noise like through my Skype. I'm like, oh.
It's probably the dog. The dog is sitting right here scratching his balls. Probably tripping up the mic.
Better his than yours. and I was watching with a friend of mine who was like a huge Stevie Nicks fan. So it wasn't even anything like okay, we're watching this. All right, fine. And I had always heard that people, you know, said, oh my God, Lindsey Buckingham is just like such an amazing guitar player. I'm like, really? Mr. Holiday Road? I don't know. And so, you know, the time and the concert comes and he's, you know, Big Love is going on. And even before that, you know, they open up with a chain and it's just, you know, I've never learned how to play guitar without a pick. Well, and you know, I'm seeing this and he's, and I'm like, what are you doing? And so that just kind of set me off. And like when that thing was out, like it's like 97 or so, I bought the album and it was, I'm pretty sure that's all I listened to for a good 6 months. And, I'm glad I saw it because it was, it gave me an appreciation for something that I wouldn't have had without being forced to watch that by a good friend. So yeah, it worked out. And Lindsey's solo stuff is wonderful. It can get a little weird, but I really enjoy his solo albums.
What was the one? I'm trying to remember. Come on, brain, you can do it. Out of the Cradle. That was an incredible record.
Yes. And the little I love the little interludes between mm-hmm. songs every now and again. And you know, that thing starts out with this little 29-second thing that is just like, whoa. And then it goes into, you know, Don't Look Down. And it's just, you know, fantastic pop, but, you know, not bubblegum. It's well-constructed and there's a lot going on. And they're great. I mm-hmm. love them. So that is the one of the benefits, I guess, of, you know, something like, you know, having music, the availability to music that we have currently, but, you know, still buy stuff, kids. Don't steal music. That's uncool.
Yeah. So what's something else you've heard recently where you're like either something new or something, you know, old where you're like, God damn.
And it's with a sad kind of, you know, for a sad thing caused it, but and I know, you know, everybody does this, you know, Bowie died. Everyone is the biggest Bowie fan and everyone just bought the catalog and, you know, and it's sad that, you know, something like this has to happen to go back and appreciate that sort of thing. But, you know, I dusted off a whole bunch of AC/DC records when I was working in the shop and, you know, and it's always been something, you know, I've always thought AC/DC was great, of course, but if I was going to, it might not necessarily be something that I was going to put on, wouldn't necessarily be like the first record that I would put on, but you know, I just kind of went back and just started listening to like everything up through Back in Black. And I'm just like, man, just, it's just perfect. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had, you know, Joe Walsh had tweeted about Malcolm's passing and, I had heard him on a podcast that I listened to, you know, he's gotten to know him a little bit and, you know, talked about how everybody knows he was the engine behind the band, but you know, it's like they took the same handful of chords and just did nothing but just write these killer songs. Then none of them sounded the same, mm-hmm. you know, and they're just all, it's just perfect. It's just perfect. It's, you know, going back to Twitter, you know, like following Mitch LaFon, how he'll ask, you know, like this record or this record. And he's been asking some really impossible questions lately. Cause it's just like, there's no wrong answer. And you can do that with the AC/DC stuff. It's just, you know, do you prefer, you know, Dirty Deeds or High Voltage? And it's just like, you could say, well, Dirty Deeds, I'm not going to go, oh, you're insane. You'd be like, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you? You know, or high voltage. You'd be like, yeah. I mean, I remember vividly when I was a kid, I was probably about 9. That was when I first started buying albums and stuff with, you know, allowance money and things like that. I remember I was staying with my grandparents for a couple of weeks in the summer. And, you know, we went to the mall and grandma's like, oh, you know, you can buy a little something and, you know, nothing over $10. And so I bought, high voltage, and she's looking at this thing and she's like, I don't know. I'm like, It's okay. I can have it. It's okay. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, there's this lightning bolt and there's Angus and he's sticking his tongue out and AC/DC, what does that mean? And, you know, I'm like, no, it's okay. And oh man, was it ever, and I'm listening to that over the weekend as I'm, you know, working outside and it's just, you know, it's really unfortunate. But you know, the shadows are getting longer for all of us. And, it's what a legacy and what a mark that they've left on our conscious, you know, and on a lighter note, I guess, an album that I love to listen to when it's really nice outside, is Dark Lands by Jesus and Mary Chain. Cause there are just some aspects of it that are just perfect, wonderful, poppy goodness. And it's kind of like sunshine and you're driving and you're happy and everything's good.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I don't know that I would say that Jesus and Mary Chain is an uplifting band. So maybe I'm hearing it wrong, but that is like, you know, then again, you know, I appreciate the sense of humor in Morrissey and Typo Negative and think that they're hilarious. So,
Typo Negative. Oh
my God. Oh, that is so wonderful.
I've got an interview I'm going to be putting on the podcast as soon as I find a tape player. It's me at 20 years old interviewing Pete Steele.
Wow.
And it's on, it's on cassette. It's when World Coming Down came out.
I love that record.
Yeah, and it was one of the first interviews I'd ever done. And he was just the coolest guy. I was probably like sticking too rigidly to my questions. And I was really nervous and stuff. But I haven't even listened to it yet. But I remember it being like a massive moment for me. Like, wow.
Sure.
Because, you know. Yeah. I was a goth kid, especially at college, and, you know, getting to talk to that guy, you know, he's kind of like king goth in the era.
Right. Yeah. No, I was kind of like, there were sensibilities of goth that I enjoyed, but it was always kind of like at that time when, you know, bands like, you know, The Cure and, you know, Peter Murphy's career was going and that sort of thing. You know, I was like, I'm in the LA Guns, man. And that was it. You know? And it was, you know, so unfortunate for me, but, I did get to see Peter Murphy a couple times live in the '90s. We were seeing him once on the Holy Smoke tour and the opening band of all people was Jewel.
Wow.
the album had just come out. Her first album had just come out and the who will save your soul, that was the song, right? That was like the hit. It hadn't hit just yet. And I remember I was with my friend Scott and we were at the show and you know, we're listening to Jewel and it was just her and an acoustic guitar and I'm like, this is an interesting pairing. It was, you know, it was fine, you know, but I got to see Typo on that World Coming Down tour in Chicago. And, you know, and one of the things that I loved about Typo is they were just heavy as hell. And oh my God, I love their cover of Black Sabbath.
Yes.
But from the satanic perspective and I how they changed the lyrics, you know, so I'm like, that's just genius. And that whole thing just starts out so great. Like I remember, that was on a compilation, Nativity in Black.
Nativity in Black. Don't get me started.
And I remember reading a review and it was like, leave it to Typo Negative to take the world's slowest riff and play it slower. And who would have thought that, you know, that Iommi, that riff, it is the most evil thing you could possibly ever imagine. And to hear it played slower just on a piano, God, man, it just ratchets it up a notch. But they were also, you know, they were just hilarious. And they, when I saw them, they did a cover of, it was Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And, you know, they took what they did seriously. They didn't take themselves seriously. And quite frankly, that's something that I do with what I do, or at least try to. You know, I mean, let's face it, you know, if you get to know me, you learn that I'm pretty much a cartoon character and, you know, and I don't take myself all that seriously. Obviously I care very much about the guitars that I create and the relationships that I create with people. But you know, I try and have fun too. So
totally. And that's probably the perfect note to leave it on.
You're welcome. Everybody.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the chat. It's been really fun and I can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see you at NAMM because I'm going. Woohoo!
Oh, good, good, good. I'm so glad, and we will definitely get to spend hopefully more time than we did. Than you know, just maybe get to do something outside of a booth.
Yeah, for sure.
That would be fun. So, Cool. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you having me on, and you know, have a good whatever time of day this is for you.
It is 11:16 a.m.
It's 6:16 p.m. So greetings from the past. I look forward to the future, and we'll do this again soon.
Indeed. Cool.
See ya.